Welcome to You Totally Made That Up. We are a bi-weekly history podcast that tells you the wildest, craziest, nuttiest stories from yesteryear. Ones that sound like someone must have totally made them up. But they're true. And we especially like the ones that have supernatural, paranormal, woo-woo elements, so those parts may only be true to the people who live them. We don't go for the lore says or the legend goes, though. We want dates and names and all the facts we can find. And I am Nash.
And I am Tiff.
We are your hosts. And this episode is a very special one because it's our anniversary. We've been doing this for 1 year. Can you believe it?
I can't. It's gone by so fast.
It really has. It really has. And we are so very thankful for all our listeners. You guys are great about letting us know what we're doing right, what we're doing wrong. Please do keep that up. And if we haven't had the opportunity to meet you yet, talk to us. You'll hear at the end of the episode how to get in touch with us, you know, email and all the social medias. So holler at us. We love it.
We do.
But like we say, this is the special anniversary episode. So for this one, we did something a little different. We've just gathered a bunch of clips from all the episodes throughout the year. And they're the ones that just made us laugh the most or made you guys laugh the most.
Yeah, the really wacky, silly, out there kind of moments.
And you know what? If you're brand new, welcome.
This might actually be a great first episode to listen to if you haven't listened to us yet. And if you've got a friend or somebody that you know that you think should be listening to us, you know, maybe send them over to listen to this episode because it might be a great way for them to get to know us.
So, all right, that's all from us. Let's get into it.
Happy anniversary, Nash.
Happy anniversary, Tiff. They show Bowden chain smoking. He is smoking throughout the entirety of this documentary. And he's reading and looking concerned and exhausted back at the church. That's all they have are these cutscenes of him chain smoking and looking exhausted.
Wouldn't you be?
I mean, oh, listen, I'd be snorting lines off of that footboard that the kid keeps kicking. I mean, I'd be doing rails off of the tank in the bathroom. So they get cranking. I mean, like, they've really gotten cranking now. So nights pass, and then Robbie cranks it up too. Now he's starting to hit them. And it says, his blows were beyond the ordinary strength of a boy. The journal says, in a moment, he was normal, and the family knelt around the bed and said prayers of thanksgiving. Bowden's like, score. But the ritual says, hey, sometimes Stan's going to play it cool, and you need to stay on guard. Bowden's been gone for about an hour when the kid starts moaning and calls his mom that he's feeling wonky again. So Bowden probably buys a new pack of cigarettes and comes back. Now it says that this is about...
He got a whole carton. Don't even try and pretend.
Right. He got a carton. He put it in the trunk, but he popped it back, took a couple drags, walks in the house.
When he was done with Christine, he decided, you know what? I don't want this dog anymore.
No.
So he went... Oh, yes. He went and he grabbed that poodle and he slaughtered it as well with his bare hands. And then he's covered in blood, obviously. He's naked, obviously.
Obviously.
And he's like, you know what? I'm going to go for a walk. Let's go outside. Let's get some fresh air in here. So he starts
got the leash and then before he remembered. I'm sorry. I'm so sorry. I love dogs. I have 2 dogs. Everybody shut up.
And then the most, I guess, kind of popular one, the most well-known one, happened in 1989 on Halloween when a young woman named Doris Teen Gibson was driving along the road. She leaned over to change the station on the radio. And when she did that, she felt the right front tire jump up off the ground like she had hit something, an animal or debris in the road. So she gets out of the car to go and kind of see what it is. And she's looking into the darkness and she saw a dark, hairy form starting to come at her. So she gets in her car. She tries to drive away and this thing apparently jumped on the back of her car and was trying to cling to the trunk as she's driving away.
Well, she'd run over it. It was pissed.
Yeah, right? Stop, I need your insurance information. Yeah. But I can say that the Beast of Bray Road, there are apparently photos. I came across one that was, it's special.
Oh, dear.
And so, yeah, we'll, of course, have that linked so that you can see photographic evidence of this creature.
100%. I'm sure it is clear and it's not blurry and that you can see detail and that...
Bitch, you are driving. You are trying to not let this creature jump on your trunk. Okay? You're going to do the best that you can with what you're given.
So if I told you that a demon was going to approach you and offer you the chance to transform into a wolf, and all you had to do was wear something, you know, like you could take it on and off, and that's how the switch would happen, what would you imagine this thing or this garment, whatever it was, what would you imagine it to be? Just take a guess.
I don't know, like a cloak, I guess? Kind of, something like that, maybe?
Mm-hmm. Exactly. That is a perfect guess. And I would, you know, maybe a ring, like or necklace, maybe a bracelet. Yeah. You know that what I mean? Like just easy. Something easy. Something real easy, like you're talking about, like whip on a cloak. Maybe like, you know, the necklace was like some claws or teeth or something. Something easy, right? Mm-mm. No, it's a girdle. It's a furry girdle. It is petable Spanx. Some places call it a belt. Nah, we're going with girdle. And because I, in my mind, I like to think it's some sort of like Dr. Frankenfurter thing. And he's fishnet and heels. Yeah, I don't know Pete's life. Okay, I don't know his life. I don't. Hard to run in heels, but still. Okay.
So he does well, and he's pretty proud of himself, and he wants everyone else to be proud of him, too. So he builds this huge grand mansion in Albany. And in 1854, this house was completed. And the lore has it that he built it as a monument to himself. And it's quote, this is quoting him, to show the fools in Albany what money could do.
Whoa. Oh, he's charming.
One source, one source had mistyped it as foals. I just kind of love the idea of him wanting to show off to young horses.
Goddamn horses. They're going to learn.
They're condescending faces. Yeah. And so now the very last Hayden is Armenia, and her nickname was Mamie. She was pretty embarrassed by all of the family misfortunes and all of the scandals. And she ended up leaving the estate, and she went to Waterville, Maine. And that was where she died in 1927, and she had no spouse, no children. So now 1927 was the end of the Hayden line. There were no more descendants. So Mama Mercy, mm-hmm. She cursed them. They're gone. They gone.
There was a line of horses outside the funerals, just laughing their asses off. And I quote, Leopold I loved weird blood sports. In the 17th century, it was expected that royals would show their manliness by killing animals. Most chose to do so by organizing hunting parties. But Leopold I was different. The Holy Roman Emperor wasn't content with simply shooting animals. He had to kill them in the craziest ways possible. One of Leopold's favorite quote-unquote sports involved getting his courtiers to wrap a live fox in a blanket. Leopold would then arrange a gang of dwarfs to beat the helpless creature with sticks until it was dead. Oh my God. He's the worst. A gang of dwarfs.
Oh my God. Okay. So he was trying to show off his manliness, but what did he do? Oh, my God.
Well, killing animals at a severe disadvantage seems to have been Leopold's specialty. At various times, he used falcons to hunt herons and had deer submerged in a deep pool before shooting them one by one with a crossbow. So, yeah. Oh, he's a real stud. This is really hunting. Uh-huh. Sure. Idiot. So, putting a changeling in a fire would cause it to jump up the chimney and return the human child. Various legends describe other ways to foil a fairy kidnapper One was to shout, God bless you, which would cause, like, Gesundheit, which would cause the fairy to abandon the child. Another possible tactic was to insert oneself into an argument over who would keep the child. So shouting, give it to me, would trick the fairy into releasing the kid back into a human. And simple charms such as an inverted coat or open iron scissors left where the child sleeps were thought to ward them off.
Please leave the scissors where the baby sleeps.
Yeah, please put the scissors in the bassinet. That's totally safe. And tetanus. I suspect that all that stupid bread and tea stuff and force, I mean, they probably gave children, you know, concoctions and stuff, but all that bread and jam and tea stuff, that was just weird. Like that, I couldn't find that that had anything to do with anything. like you know what I'm saying? Like it said, fairies are repelled by iron. Fairies are repelled by XYZ, certain things. But never did it say, oh, you know what? You know what really just puts a kink in their wings? If you bring out some PB&Js. Like it just, it never.
So Ince never let go of his beloved studio. Since the time of his death, he's been seen walking up and down stairways, especially one by where he had a private screening room. His office is still intact, even through all of these years, and he's been known to show up there. And in the 80s, they were doing some renovations, and he appeared to some construction workers. Some of the men saw a man with a bowler hat, and he was watching them from the catwalks. And when they tried to talk to him, he just kind of turned and walked away and ended up walking like through a wall. And then not too long after that, there were some other construction workers that saw him, and he ended up scolding them, telling them, I don't like what you're doing to my studio.
Before I love it.
He turned around and walked into a wall again.
Love it.
Yep. So, yeah, he's still around. He's still haunting the studio. Apparently a few other people haunt the studio, too. I mean, it's an interesting story, and I think it's funny just to imagine this ghost walking around with a bowler hat, just telling people, I don't like what you're doing around here.
The construction workers are like, okay, well, after I go change my pants, we'll come back to these blueprints and see what we can't do. Thanks.
Right. Yeah. All right. You've got some notes. Good, good.
You've got some notes. And then they put her in the crypt, and he's put curtains up in there and crosses and votive candles that he plans on keeping lit so she won't be in the dark. And he's the only one with the keys to it.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
So he's like Martha Stewarted the shit out of it and then like triple locks it, and he's the only one with the keys. He visits every day at sunset, and at some point, and this is now, we're trucking on through time. This is now, we're at the 18-month mark after she's died. He starts hearing banging. Nobody's around. He checks. He cruises the graveyard for just a second. He checks. He decides Elena is being mischievous and teasing him. And now he hears tapping and scratching from inside. So he opens it up, and now he hears her voice. And she tells him, you do love me still, don't you? Tell me, am I really dead? And he's like, nah, girl, your body's just asleep. You're just dreaming. And she goes, I wish you would take me with you to your home. I want to stay with you. And he says, well, when it's darker, he'll bring her with him to his house. So now he's pumped. And he starts getting his plan together. And he starts bringing her gifts again every night like he did when she was alive. And he says that sometimes, you know, she'd be a chatty Cathy. Other times she was silent. And sometimes she would tell him what was in his pockets. So, you know, she's doing parlor tricks. She's a magician.
She's had time to work on it, okay?
Yeah, she said, yeah, look, she got her new 15. Look, if he'll come back in a month, she'll have a brand new 15. And if you bring her a hat, she'll pull out a rabbit. You know, she's, Elena's multifaceted, okay? So one night, he was there taking pictures of it. He feels hands stroking his face and his bald little head. And when he developed the film, he sees this bright white figure standing near the entrance. And he subsequently saw it in front of him ghosting through the door on another night. And he felt tingles when he touched the coffin. Elena is also singing Spanish songs for him. One specifically about how a grieving groom rescued the body of his dead bride. And he sings German songs back to her. In particular, one that his mother loved. There are so many layers to this. I mean... Now, okay. The cemetery was located the way it's described, is in this kind of big open public area that had neighborhoods and shops and whatever all around, and that the neighborhood kids would throw stones at him and tease him for, you know, being obsessed with the corpse. So he starts visiting later at night instead of at sunset, you know, instead of in the evening. And he's waiting until the moon is waning so it's not so bright. And he tells her this is still going to be a wicked trick to pull off. And she goes, step outside. Let me break this down for you. You're going to throw a big blanket over the iron fence to block everybody's view. But how am I going to lift the casket? He asks her. Get a kid's wagon, she says. Because of course, Carl. Come on. Should I say, of corpse? I am trash. All right. So, but he had scoped out around the cemetery, and there was an abandoned house across the street. And so he rents it. And he also finds this side gate that nobody ever used. So he's prepared. He comes with cushions and ropes, and he gets her coffin settled in the wagon, and he calls her, quote, the precious load. He calls her that multiple times in this audiobook that I listened to.
He's got his fucking precious.
His precious load. Mother of
but
God.
But it's so romantic.
Yeah, this is super romantic.
But before all of our fancy science, people were looking for signs. They were trying to figure out how the human body worked. You know, they questioned, like, is bad blood actually a thing? Do people with red hair have angry temperaments?
The redheads, man, getting the shaft since blah, 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 century. Yeah.
Since medieval times. This is when a lot of pseudoscience was popping up, you know, like phrenology, which is where, you know, you study the bumps on your skull, and apparently that's going to tell you if somebody's got a bad attitude problem and if somebody's going to be killing their children or something like that.
You got to watch out for old Lumpy over there. Not only is he a redhead, his head looks funny. There was a woman by the name of Mina, a.k.a. Marjorie Crandon, also known as the Witch of Lime Street. And she was submitted as a candidate for a, quote, prize offered by Scientific American magazine to any medium who could demonstrate telekinetic ability under scientific controls. Now, Marjorie was described in one of my sources as, quote, an attractive Boston socialite who performed seances in the nude and produced ectoplasm from her nether regions. I mean, you know, me too. Oh. Given the right circumstances and enough moonshine, am I right? You know.
She continued her fortune telling through the hen of Leeds. She had this chicken, this hen, that would produce marvelous eggs bearing prophecies. And she had folks believing that it was the end times because one of them actually read Christ is coming. And she was able to charge people a penny to come and see the hen and the magic eggs. And it's very Charlotte's Web-like with these magical messages appearing from this animal. But of course, there were some skeptics. And
do you think?
It's hard to imagine that people didn't believe that this chicken was, you know, riding on eggs and popping them out. But
I mean, some people that's didn't suspicious. Believe it. I'm trying to imagine was she like sitting there with a quill and ink or whatever? I'm picturing like a little kid with Easter eggs, like bent over, concentrating real hard. And this one has polka dots.
Well, so these skeptics ended up taking the hen away from her to see if it would produce these eggs on its own without her being present. And of course it didn't. And what they ended up finding out was that the hen was laying eggs. She would scrawl the message onto it using like vinegar and stuff to kind of etch the message into it. And then she would shove the egg back into the hen so that it would relay this egg with the message.
Oh, burger.
I think the real miracle here was that she was able to hold down that chicken stick the egg back inside.
I mean, listen.
Screw the writing on the eggs. That was the real miracle.
How would you describe her appearance, Tiff?
Well, you know, picture whatever you imagine for like a German housewife in the early 1900s. Like, that's her. You imagine kind of a plump, you know, nothing special, you know, whatever. That's her. She is described, though, by a lot of people as comely, and some people called her a naughty vamp.
But you know what I'm wanting you to tell the listeners, don't you?
Oh, I do.
Okay.
I think she was described that way because she had frickin' volleyballs on her chest. I don't know how this woman didn't walk around with a hunchback, because, my God, the breast-to-top ratio is just astounding. It really, really is.
They settled somewhere down around her waist, if I recall correctly.
They did. They did. You know what? She was proud of them. She knew how to use them. I say good for Dolly. I'm sitting there thinking, like, okay, it's one thing for a kid to, like, reconstruct a little mouse skeleton when you have to take apart the owl pellet. But to just go and casually be like, come on, kids.
Wait, what the shit are you talking about?
You didn't have to do that in biology?
You took apart an owl and found a mouse? What did you
say? No, 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 no. An owl pellet, you know, like, so they eat it.
No, I don't know. That's why I'm asking.
Okay, so owls, you know, they eat the little rodents and all the little things. But when they're digesting it, the bones and other larger fragments kind of, they get regurgitated. So, I know my son already did this.
The fuck is going on in Wisconsin?
So we were all given owl pellets and little scalpels and tweezers, and we had to go through and find the skeleton and try to put it together as best that we could.
What's an owl pellet? What is that?
It's what they regurgitate.
It's called a pellet?
Yeah. No?
No! They did not distribute owl vomit and say, put a mouse butt together.
You missed out.
I'm dying.
I swear to God, it's a thing.
Hey, here's some bear scat. Let's see if you can put a human back together.
He credited his wife, Hannah, as being a natural healing medium and said that she was a perfect battery and she was able to summon spirits. So she actually worked together with him in what eventually became his business as a photographer. So
we were talking about compliments earlier. Mm-hmm. You know, that nice compliment that Mary was paid.
Yeah.
And I don't think being called a battery would make my list at all.
Mm-mm. No, I didn't care for that either.
You have great conduction. You have great, what, like ACDC? No, not ACDC. That's a band.
No, that is. It's, yeah.
Oh, it is current. Yeah,
it's current.
Baby, you alternate my current like nobody's business. I want to rock and roll all night and party every day. That's ACDC, right? Or did I just make a bigger ass of myself?
That's Kiss.
That's Kiss. God damn it. Well, they have lightning bolts.
You tried. Yeah.
I hate all of you. Okay, bye. So you graciously agreed without question to my suggested topic for today. And I feel like I need to tell you how it came about.
Okay.
Okay. So when I was thinking on topics, I was like, well, it's officially fall. Wonder what'll come up if I do a broad search for, you know, like monster and autumn and paranormal things and combos like that. And one of the search results said, the spirit of fall in Gettysburg. And under it, it says, with cooler temps and breathtaking fall foliage, ... And then the magic words, try out a ghost tour or paranormal excursion. So I go to the website and I look. And it is lovely. It is easy on the navigation. Everything's well written. But if I could just shit on it briefly. On the seasonal highlights page, the banner across the top features two couples in what appears to be a wheat field. And one couple, they're looking at each other laughing. And the other couple is making out. I mean, y'all. this is Gettysburg. I mean, I'm not saying that the banner should be like fresh bodies on a bleak field, but maybe somewhere in between horny and horror. Okay, so.
Don't go bone in Gettysburg.
Please don't bone in Gettysburg.
When I was 15, we moved into a new house. My room was in the cellar. A couple of weeks after moving in, I noticed a tiny glass jar on a small shelf. It was about 3 centimeters in diameter and about 6 centimeters tall with a metal lid, full to the brim with a clear liquid, which I can only presume was alcohol or formaldehyde, and it contained a fetus. I was both freaked out and fascinated. It was in remarkably good condition, though, intact and translucent, with developing bones, including the skull, showing through the skin. I am not a biologist. I can't tell you what kind of fetus, other than it was definitely a mammal. Large head, small body, and little nub-like limbs. To this day, I have no idea what species it was or why on earth it was there. We did consider having it identified, but never got around to it. To be honest, I think the morbid curiosity was drowned out by no one really wanting to know exactly what it was or why it was there. So we just left it on the shelf where I found it. Then we kind of got distracted by nearly dying from carbon monoxide poisoning and forgot about it.
I'm sorry.
It was still on the shelf when we moved out. By the way, my mother was convinced that house was haunted for a while. Mom bought a cheap second-hand piano at an auction shortly after moving in, the tall stand-up kind, and put it in the front room. None of us could play a note. Anyway, she kept hearing piano music late at night and was shitting her pants until she got chatting to the woman next door at the pub. It was her playing piano, thinking no one could hear. For some reason, piano music carried when nothing else did, including my kid brother blasting shit music in his room at all hours.
And that's it.
That's your listener story.
Okay. There's a lot here. Here's my knee jerk, though. Here, all I can muster up at this point is, you had a what in your where? Oh, you know.
Yeah.
Just a fetus in the basement.
Yeah. Hey, Mom. I found this weird jar. Just leave it.
We're not going to discuss this. Tell your brother to go turn down his music. And let's listen to the ghost piano. Oh, and do you feel loopy? I suspect we're getting poisoned by carbon monoxide.
Right.
Hi, I'm Sunny Hepburn.
And I'm Brandy Fleeks.
And this is
Book of Lies,
the podcast, where we discuss liars, cheats, and thieves,
scammers, and dirty, rotten scoundrels.
So tune in for new episodes every Tuesday to hear about another low-down, dirty liar.
And learn how to spot them.
So that's Book of Lies podcast. Find us on your favorite podcast player or on Twitter at Book of Lies Pod, on Instagram at Book of Lies Podcast, and on Facebook at Book of Lies Podcast.
And if you want to send us an email, send us one at bookoflivespodcast@gmail.com.
Okay?
Bye-bye.
But nobody beat the New York Times, whose headline was, "Radio Listeners in Panic, Taking War Drama as Fact." And part of the article said, quote, "The broadcast, which disturbed households, interrupted religious services, created traffic jams, and clogged communication systems, was made by Orson Welles. At least a score of adults required medical treatment for shock and hysteria. In Newark, in a single block at Hedden Terrace and Hawthorne Avenue, more than 20 families rushed out of their houses with wet handkerchiefs and towels over their faces to flee from what they believed was to be a gas raid. Some began moving household furniture." What does that mean? Like against doors or just, hey, I think
they're tossing it in the back of the truck like Beverly Hillbillies. Let's go.
You know, I know this Mars shit's going down, but don't you think the couch would look better against that wall? I don't know what that means. Some begin moving household furniture. Well, shit. Throughout New York, families left their homes, some to flee to nearby parks.
How would a let's go to a wide open space. Let's. Okay. I think you've got the idea.
He ends up getting described after so many different sightings and, of course, now being a city dweller as a kind of gentleman demon. Personally, based on the images that we have, I think he's more of like a pirate Batman. Like, you really have to take a second and look at the show notes and see these images that were published along with a lot of these stories. You're going to see it immediately. Like, you're going to get it. Like, imagine Jerry Seinfeld wearing that puffy shirt, wearing like riding breeches with knee-high leather boots, and then like Batman, the cowl, the Batman.
Arr, you die a hero or you live long enough to see yourself become the villain. Where be my rum? Arg.
You're an amazing pirate, Ash.
Where be my rum, Alfred?
The bat rum?
The bat rum. Mm-hmm. There's a candidate for the episode title. Carry on.
Okay, I just need to pop in here really quick because in looking all of this up, have you ever heard of moon parties?
Is it like a quinceañera for when you get your period?
It is.
Okay.
I did not know that was a thing until like, I don't know, I was older. I was an adult and I was working with another woman and she's like, my daughter got her period. We're having her moon party. And I'm like, no, don't do that.
Do you get like bouquets of tampons? And
I don't know. That should be like, yeah, like a baby shower. You know, people supply you with diapers and all that shit. Like have a moon party and let people just stock you up with supplies. That should be how it goes. That's probably not. It's probably people being like, oh, you're a woman now. That's so wonderful.
No, I want a bunch of crappy, cheap underwear because you don't want to wear your good stuff at that time of the month. I want like a crate of tampons and pads
and chocolate.
I want chocolate. I want like a heating pad. I want ibuprofen or whatever is your drug of choice.
All right. I just needed to know. I just needed to ask if like that was something.
I don't want a goddamn cake in the shape of a moon.
I hope we haven't alienated any men.
We apologize, men. It happens. It's a bodily function. If girls get moon parties, like what do boys get for like getting their first boner? I don't know. maybe there's some cultural tradition of which we're unaware where you get some special quinceañera for your first boner.
If you know about that, make sure to tell us.
Make sure to write in and tell us.
You can find, of course, lots of information on Mary and on Henry and all his wives. There's lots of dramatic shows and yeah, the whole history lesson. There's that song, right? Isn't there a song? Yeah.
Okay.
No, isn't there? What's that one? Like, I'm Henry the Eighth. I am. No.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
Okay. Anyways.
Okay. We're going to let that slide. I have no idea.
Whatever. I know that there's lots of ways you could learn about Henry and all of his wives and what an asshat he was. All right.
I don't think that's about... That song's not about King Henry.
What now?
It's I'm Henry. Henry the Eighth I am. Henry the Eighth I am. I got married to the widow next door. She's been married 7 times before. And everyone was a Henry. So he's Henry, the eighth Henry that she married, not Henry the Eighth, the King of England.
All right. Oh my God. I'm glad you knew the song. That's the only part I knew was I'm Henry the Eighth I am. I'm going to trust that you're going to edit that for me.
Absolutely not.
Oh, bitch.
Says a boy's craft guide. This is the only evening on which a boy can feel free to play pranks outdoors without danger of being pinched, and it is his delight to scare passing pedestrians, ring doorbells, and carry off the neighbor's gates. And that even if a boy had to fetch the gate he stole out of the tree he left it in, the punishment is nothing compared with the sports the pranks have furnished him. Okay. All right. All right. Let me regale you with some examples of this blowing off of steam. And get ready. 1879, Cincinnati. Approximately 200 boys were able to stop a train. How did they do that, you ask? Well, because they laid a dead body across the tracks.
Oh my God.
Now, I looked this up because I could not know more. And in a newspaper article that talks about the incident, it says it was a stuffed body, all right? And that quote, strange to say, the engineer never cussed a word. It reminded him of when he was a boy and practiced the same tricks. Y'all.
What?
Y'all, they stopped a train. Okay, same article. And this is from the Cincinnati Daily Star, by the way, November 1st, 1879 edition. Here's a collection of other goodies. Gates were lifted. Signs exchanged from one building to another. Beaver knockers. What? What? Beaver knockers were stretched across the sidewalk. Tic-tacs were fastened on window frames. The office of the Consolidated Coal and Mining Company was whitewashed, and a lump of coal was left in front of the office. At an East End game store, on the hooks where game is displayed, the boys hung a string of rats. The contents of ash barrels and garbage boxes were strewn in every direction. Wagon wheels were hung on trees. Cats were tied by the tails, hung on doorknobs, and left to fight each other to death. Holy
shit. Oh my God.
A whole hogshead was rolled along 5th to Main and left standing near Main Street. A number of trees were cut down and dragged in front of the doors of residents. It was a big night for the urchins, and police were powerless to prevent their mischievous pranks.
What? Were they? Were they though?
Were
really?
They? Were they? Minus the animal abuse? Wow.
Oh my God.
That is one city in one state in the entire country. Now, all that's missing, listen, all that's missing from that story is like a feral goat, some moonshine, and 4 cans of Crisco. I can't. Unbelievable. I mean, these little ingenious fuckers. Again, minus the animal abuse. Amazing.
Yeah. Wow.
Also of note on cats, you didn't have to get one from Egypt to be all trendy. You could just let your own dry out and use it around the house, or specifically in the house. Per the wonderful Dr. Lindsay Fitzharris, she says that cats have been, quote, found in the floorboards of early 19th century houses in Britain. During this period, it was customary to hide dried or mummified cats within the walls of one's home to ward off evil spirits and bring good luck to the inhabitants. It was believed that cats had a sixth sense and would have psychic abilities in the afterlife to find spirits. Jesus, Lord, help us. What?
All I am thinking about are those episodes of Hoarders that I watched where they would find the mummified cats. And maybe those people were just like believers of this.
No.
It wasn't a hoarding problem.
No. No.
No?
Okay. No.
All right.
If they were in the walls, you'd have a case. And I don't mean like maybe they'd clawed their way into the wall praying for an escape from the horde. I can't. Y'all, people were putting dead cats in the walls. Huh. Now, if those didn't sell you, if I didn't sell you, how's about this one? Quote, in May of 1967, a Virginia hippie commune became the first to swear off marijuana use. We toke up on green tea now, explained founder Zeke Zapper Sternbaum to Time magazine. That stuff was making us see huge turkeys that pecked holes in our VW camper and swallowed our sleeping bags whole.
No. Oh. Zeke Zapper.
Uh-huh. So his name is Zeke Sternbaum, as if that's not enough, but it's Zeke Zapper Sternbaum.
Air quotes.
They had to get that in there just to make sure they identified him correctly.
Uh-huh. Oh, so as not to be confused with the other hippie commune leader, Zeke Sternbaum. I could only find 2 real sources about the Gobblesquatch, but both of them mention the same dude, a professor, Wesley Wimscott. He wrote a paper in 2009 called Gobble Squatch, Giant Drumsticks, or Dumb Shticks. And in this paper, which is described as lengthy, so I shudder to think, he asserts that the root of the gobble snatch... Shit. Sorry.
Yep.
Gobble Squatch. You know, and literally I typed that in my notes. There it is, Gobble Snatch. I'm looking at it. It's Gobble Squatch everywhere else, but for whatever reason. And that sounds like some sort of like really aggressive porno.
It's like, you know, making fun of Benedict Cumberbatch.
Yeah.
Benadryl Gobble Snatch.
No, I'm sorry. You mean Benedict Zapper Gobble Snatch. More on baths. Quote, the Battle Creek Sanitarium boasted of offering 46 different kinds of baths. And whatever, some of them were just foot baths and blah, blah, blah.
You sit in water. That's a bath.
Right. And believe me, I'm not going to name all the varieties. The one y'all need to know about was called the continuous bath, which is what you'd picture in a bathtub like normal. And they'd sometimes put a cover over it. But the thing was, it could last, as John Harvey wrote, quote, for many hours, days, weeks, or months, as the case may require. And what were these beneficial for? Well, for skin issues, mental conditions like delirium, mania, our favorite for the ladies, hysteria, and also chronic diarrhea. Now, which, if you've got the cha-cha-chas, if you've got the cha-cha-chas, you better hope that there's an assistant standing guard to get you out and to the toilet real, real fast. I mean, the man was obsessed with poo. He was obsessed with poo.
So a brief little thing about cocaine here. It comes from the coca plant in South America. Natives would chew on the leaves and they would get bursts of energy and awareness. In 1859, an Italian...
I'm sorry. And awareness.
So they were alert. I don't know how else to put it. I've never done cocaine, so I can't say how they were feeling.
I just invented calculus. Woo! I can count all the stars in the sky.
Anyways, in 1860, a German chemist named Albert Niemann was fucking around with the leaves and discovered that the white powdery substance that he got from them would make his tongue go numb. And around that same time, a French chemist named something you want to add?
No, I'm just... I counted every feeling, Kyle. But my tongue is numb.
Hey, you gotta try it out.
I could run real fast. My tongue don't work, but I could run real fast. But talking about how well these things were getting around, here's some dish on that. When walking toward the house, they're going slowly and raising their arms. And bless old Glennie, to Billy Ray and Lucky, she was like, hey, Butch Cassidy, Sundance Kid, reckon they're trying to communicate with us? So, love Glennie, love her. Anyway, when these things would tear off out of there, other than doing that flipping thing and floating to the ground, they'd lower their arms and go for the darkness. They're stiff, but they're getting after it. I myself am picturing a rapid waddle, such as...
like E.T.?
Like E.T. We are now at a total of 4 times these things have been shot at, and just a big old goose egg on the killing front, and it would seem on the intimidation front. And now comes one sauntering around the side of the house, and Lucky greets it with a face full of buckshot. It again flips away and runs off. Quote, when a direct blast from a 12-gauge shotgun had no effect, Lucky made an obvious decision. He would leave the things alone. The men went back into the house to try and think what to do next. Is that now? Is that the obvious decision? We're going to think things through now. Now!
Shoot first, ask questions later. Okay.
Sure. Says one of my sources, quote, in his predictions, Partridge had achieved the acme of multiple choice vagueness, safe hedging, and oracular ambiguity. I mean, burn. And here's some examples of partridge astrology that they give. The end of this month or beginning of the next will undoubtedly give violence and violent actions and perhaps private murder and such like.
Something bad's gonna happen at some point.
And such like. News from France. Good enough if proved true, though perhaps all may not be of my opinion. Okay. Okay.
What?
Here's another one. Some old statesman dies, and some eminent sea commander either called in question or decently laid by. That is nothing. That is a pile of nothing. That tells me nothing. Nobody is helped by anything that he has just said. But whatever, people ate it up. So Partridge's main thing was his almanac called Merlinus Almanac, spelled as in Merlin the Wizard.
Oh, this jackass. Oh, my God.
Oh, yeah. Slick sets Burn up to meet our buddy, Dr. Osmond Hill, and he already knows the hand story. And Hill's like, yeah, you couldn't get the whole hand, but I bet you could get a finger. This is my interpretation, by the way. I'm not quoting. But seriously, I'll quote
now. Oh, no, this is how it happened. I believe it. Mm-hmm. Dark corner of a room.
Says Byrne, quote, Osmond Hill said, you have got to get this. We've got to see it. We want to examine it. But I'd already asked the llamas if I could have the hand, and they said no, that it would bring bad luck, disaster to the temple if it was taken away. Now, Hill and Slick had already discussed this, like I say, and so it is now, and this meeting is at a restaurant. You talk about a dark corner? No, my friend. This meeting is just at a restaurant, just, you know, out in the open at a table. There's people around them, other people eating. It is now that Hill brings out a little brown paper bag and, quote, tipped out a human hand onto the table.
What?
Byrne, later in an interview, says, it was several months old and dried. I never asked him where he got it from.
Wise choice, friend. Wise choice. Hell. March 13th, 1919.
Okay, wait. Like, as in from hell? Like, that's his return address?
Yeah, like the story he's writing from.
No, this is some dollar store Jack the Ripper bullshit. This is some hardcore wannabe. I'm sorry. Carry on. All right, so from hell. Got it. Okay.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Esteemed mortal of New Orleans.
This is dumb. I have to get through this. Stop.
Keep going.
Okay. At 12:15 earthly time on next Tuesday night, I'm going to pass over New Orleans. In my infinite mercy, I'm going to make a little proposition to you people. Here it is.
Oh, it's a good one, too.
I am very fond of jazz music, and I swear by all the devils in the nether regions that every person shall be spared in whose home a jazz band is in full swing at the time I have just mentioned. Some of your people who do not jazz it out on that specific Tuesday night, if there be any, will get the axe.
Jazz it out.
Jazz it out.
You just gotta jazz it out, baby.
What? And have a jazz band? Like, are people supposed to have an actual band? What is he talking about? What is he talking about?
He's lonely. He's lonely, Nash.
Also, he's got demons in his nether regions. Isn't that what he said? That's what he said. He said nether regions. He's not lonely. Apparently, just tired and worn down, Lydia agrees to marry him. And on the night of May 28th, so really fast courtship, George and Lydia are married up at Butler's Point. I'd like to remind you that Butler's Point is where his, you know, dead wife, Nellie, is buried. Okay. It's a
very romantic place.
It's very romantic. It's just an all-purpose kind of gathering point. There's picnics. There's
one-stop shop.
Sometimes they'll bring ponies and let the kids ride. Yeah, just, you know, it's a hot dog vendor. Okay. The next day, Nellie appears and says to them that in the future, Lydia would bear a child and die soon after, telling George, Be kind to your wife, for she will not be with you long. She will have but one child and then die. I mean, what?
Wow, that's terrible.
So Nellie went from being kind of entertaining to, you know, Cunt Face McGee. Like, I don't know what is happening.
They move forward and they end up meeting Richard Parsons. So he hears that they need a place to stay and he offers them a space in his home on Cock Lane. Parsons.
Time out.
Yes.
I just want to be clear. We've got Bill and Fanny living in Dick's place over on Cock Lane.
That is absolutely correct.
Now, at this point in history, I don't know if this came up in your research. Was Fanny the word? Did it mean what it currently means to our friends across the pond? Because
let me Google.
Are you going to Google that? Okay. What the etymology, when that nickname, because to my understanding, here in the States, Fanny is a nickname for your butt. But across the pond, Fanny means a lady's naughty bits.
Right.
A few moments later.
Oh, here we go. Buttocks. 1920, American English. From earlier British meaning vulva, 1879.
All right, so we weren't quite at the point where...
No.
Okay.
It is not naughty.
Not yet.
Not yet. It's gonna be. Around the age 16, she ended up meeting and marrying a man named James Bonney. He was a small-time pirate and a sailor and really had little to nothing to offer her, except a way out. So stories differed a little bit on how this went over with her father. None of them good, let's just say that. One stated that he disowned her, another that he kicked her out. But along with that, there are stories that she didn't take that very well, and she returned in the night to set fire to his home and plantation.
Oh, Annie. This is as, here, put it this way. As much of a pusillanimous prick as Steed was, she is like the direct opposite.
And I love that she's still only 16. You know, she's responding like any teenage girl would.
Oh, yeah, we've all been there. You know, I know how my daddy reacted when I brought home my pirate boyfriend. I had no choice but to burn down the plantation, honey. What else to do?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
On one occasion, two rando dudes dig up a man, last name of Henderson, stuff him into a sack. It must have been a huge sack. I mean, my stars. And they decide they want to stop off for a drink. So into a pub/inn they go, dragging said giant sack with them. When the cops stop by to ask the owners if some grave robbers they were looking for had maybe come by, these dudes panic and they knew they had to stash the body. So they sneak into a room, get the body out of the sack, and they lay it out in a bed so it looks less like, well, a corpse in a sack and more like somebody who's just sleeping. They take off. They're never caught. Here's what they didn't know. It just so happened that the family who owned the pub and inn were, you guessed it, the Hendersons. And so later on that night, Mrs. Henderson walks into her bedroom and quote,
oh,
yeah. 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 I mean, this right here is in the fuck uppery hall of fame. Later that night, Mrs. Henderson walks into her bedroom and, quote, discovered her husband lying there clad in the grave clothes she had made with her own hands.
Oh, God. Whew.
So I'll finish off with a quote from historian and curator David Forsyth, who says, it's very interesting that the coffins continue to be talked about and remain among our most popular exhibits, even after all the debate about their origins. However, I think that the connection to the victims of Burke and Hare remains the most likely explanation. Or, you know, some morbid, fucked up kid. That I'm thinking about, like, the kid knew that he was a little left of center, so he was hiding all this shit from his parents. I'm thinking of that quote from Thelma and Louise where Susan Sarandon's like got the gun on the guy. She's like, you got a real fucked up idea, fun. So this could just be, again, calling back to Robert the doll. Maybe this is just a weird little kid. I don't know.
I don't know.
I don't know.
Interesting, though. Now, okay, let me just jump in here. Do you remember, it wasn't America's Funniest Home Videos. It was a show like that with Dave Coulier.
Yes.
You know what I'm talking about? Do you remember the jackalope from that? It it talked to people and teased them. It's gonna bother me. Okay.
Do we need a Google break?
Yeah.
Okay, we need a Google break.
A few moments later.
It was called America's Funniest People.
Okay.
Instead of America's Funniest Home Videos. And here, just from Wikipedia, originally known as Tiny the Jackalope, or simply the Jackalope, it involved a creature attacking people by playing mean tricks on them. And the character's catchphrase was, "Fast as fast can be, you'll never catch me."
100%, I remember this. Yes, yes.
Okay. So the Jackalope was later renamed Jack Chang Bada Bing in a Name the Jackalope contest.
That sounds racist or something.
Yeah, I don't like that. Let's...
What is it? Say it again. What?
It was originally Tiny the Jackalope, and then they renamed it Jack Ching Bada Bing.
Yeah, something's wrong. Something's the matter. I can't put my finger on it, but...
Yeah, that makes me feel weird, uncomfortable. I'm not sure. I don't like it.
It's very uncomfortable.
It's very uncomfortable.
For us two white, middle-aged white women, we're very uncomfortable right now. Here lies the end of the show. Hope you guys enjoyed. This is where the catchphrase goes.
Bye.
Thanks so much for listening. As a reminder, you can check out our sources for each of the episodes at show notes, along with any supplemental things we think you might enjoy.
Visit us on our blog at youtotallymadethatup.tumblr.com. You can also find us on Twitter at YTMTUpodcast and on Instagram at youtotallymadethatup. Feel free to contact us on those platforms, and you can also email us. That address is youtotallymadethatup@gmail.com.